come to the edge. We might fall. Come to the edge. It's too high. Come to the edge. And they came, and he pushed, and they flew. It's a simple little poem by Christopher Logue, one of my favorites. There's a lot packed into those few little lines. We might fall. It's too high. It can be so scary at the edge. We feel fearful. We're afraid. And what is fear after all anyway? Fear is that sinking feeling we get when we think something bad is going to happen, when we perceive danger. Fear is that thing that makes us sweat, that makes our heart race, makes our stomach turn. Fear can give us goosebumps or make the hair stand up on the back of our necks. Anyone who's ever been afraid can tell you that fear is very, very real. It's physical. We feel it in our gut, in the core of our being. But as much as we don't like it, fear is a natural human emotion. And whether everyone is willing to admit it or not, we're all afraid sometime. Everyone is afraid of something. I've given this a lot of thought. It seems to me that our fears fall into three categories. Fear of imaginary things, like monsters under the bed, the boogeyman in the closet, or the Jersey Devil. Some of you know about the Jersey Devil. For those of you who don't, it's a creature that has supposedly roamed the Pine Barrens of New Jersey for about 250 years now, and according to my brother, occasionally traveled to Oxford, Pennsylvania in the late 60s to eat five-year-old girls. Sometimes our fears are of very, very specific things. Needles, dentists, flying. These are fears of very, very real and tangible things, like snakes and mice and centipedes. Sometimes our fears are fears of conditions, fear of death, fear of chaos, fear of disorder, of not knowing what's going on, of not being in control. It's a fear of the unknown. But it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to have fears. The issue is how you react to your fears, how you respond to them. The person with the fear of flying can take the train, or take a bus, or drive, or maybe take a sedative before they fly, or maybe even take a sedative before they go to the dentist. It's inconvenient, but it's possible to avoid that thing that you fear and still live a relatively normal life. But other times, fear can paralyze you. I grew up out in the country in a big old drafty house surrounded by trees. And for some reason, those hairy centipedes liked to wait until after dark, just when I'd gone to bed, and then position themselves on the ceiling in the corner by the door in my bedroom. I swear I had centipede radar. I knew that they were there. I could sense their presence even in my sleep. And I'd wake up screaming and try to sneak out of the room so the centipede wouldn't get me. And I'll admit, I was sneaking because I didn't want it to move. I didn't want to see those undulating legs. I was terrified. I'd park myself in my brother's room or in my parents' room and refuse to leave until someone could show me the offender's dead body flushed down the toilet. I wasn't much better with the fear of snakes. One day I was outside in the backyard of my house in Denver. I was planning to live there for a year while another house was being built. And I saw a snake in the backyard. It's about this long, about that big around. That's huge. I promptly went back inside and closed the door and never went in the backyard for the rest of the time I lived in that house. And mice, well, I saw two mice in my house in West Philly. I moved. Fear can be absolutely paralyzing. And I don't mean to make light of it, because I'm one of those people who can be paralyzed by my fears. My niece and my nephew saw their strong, capable Aunt Connie reduced to tears at the sight of those tiny little gray creatures. I refused to be alone in my own home, and I spent nights at each of their houses until I could find a new place to live. I know that this fear is irrational and that it rises to the level of a phobia. It affects my life in a negative way. When we live in fear, especially in that kind of fear, we isolate ourselves from our community and from the rest of the world. When we live in that kind of fear, we're really not living at all. Many of us are living in fear today. Not necessarily fear of snakes or fear of mice or fear of flying, but fear of something much, much deeper. Something harder to run from. I'm a chaplain at Einstein. I spent an hour last week with a gentleman who was 94 years old, and he said to me, "You Americans don't understand. You should be afraid. Why are you not listening and looking? You should be afraid." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he told me the story of how the Nazis invaded Poland in 1939, and he watched his parents, his grandparents, and his siblings be killed. He told me about serving in the Russian army and not having enough to eat. He told me about coming to the United States, thinking that he'd finally reached the promised land, only to find out that because of anti-Semitism, he wasn't welcome in the place that he thought was home. So he opened his own business and led an amazing life. But still, now he looks around and he says, "You should be afraid. It's time to wake up." So this kind of fear, it comes at us in a number of different ways. Sometimes it shows up when we're holding ourselves back from saying or doing something. And I'll give you a simple example for that. Let's say you're at a poetry slam with your friend. You get called up to the mic. You're afraid to go. Your friend goes up and performs your poem and receives rave reviews. But you were too afraid to speak up. Or maybe you get the flash of an idea, a business idea, or some other idea, but you ignore it or you talk yourself out of it. Later, you realize you lost out. You missed a golden opportunity and someone beat you to it. And you are left with nothing but regret, wondering, why didn't I act sooner? Why didn't I do something? This is when we don't recognize our own talents or give ourselves enough credit for our ability to do something. So sometimes we're afraid of stepping up and acting out for what's important, for what we believe in. We let fear stand in our way and keep us from achieving our greatest potential or from creating true transformation in our world. We're afraid of rocking the boat. We're afraid of not getting it right. We're afraid people will laugh at us. We're afraid of being rejected or ostracized. We're afraid that we'll lose respect in the community. So we sit and do nothing. And in our minds, we think we're safe. We think we're staying in our comfort zone. What we're really doing is playing small, as the saying goes. It's nothing to be ashamed of. Like I said, at one point or another, everyone's been afraid, and we've all played small at some point. But it's only a short hop from playing small to not playing at all, to becoming stagnant, to becoming stuck. Our Unitarian ancestor, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, said, "The moment we begin to fear the opinions of others and hesitate to tell the truth that is in us, and for motives of policy are silent when we should speak, the divine floods of life and light no longer flow into our souls." Are you afraid of using your own power? Are you afraid of hearing yourself roar? Are you afraid of what you could do? Marianne Williamson says, "Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? Everybody is scared of something. But fear doesn't have to stop us," says blogger Lisa Burgess. "Being afraid doesn't mean we have to be quiet. It doesn't mean we have to sit down. It doesn't mean that we have to do nothing. Scared doesn't mean don't. Scared doesn't mean weak. Scared doesn't mean stop. Scared just means human. Step up into the light, face your fear, and claim your power for personal growth. Do that thing you've always been too afraid to do. Move to a new city. Try skydiving. Go back to school in your 50s and do a new career. Claim your power for social justice. Get involved with an issue that moves you. Organize a protest. Speak at a rally. Write letters to the editor. Do the thing that scares you." Someone once asked Rosa Parks if she was scared the day she refused to move on that bus. And she said, "Oh yeah, I was frightened. But I figured we needed help to get us more jobs and better education." I've been talking a lot about personal power. And by that, I mean your inner wisdom, that combination of faith and determination and will that exists within each of us. But we also hear the expression, speak truth to power, a lot these days. What kind of power do you think that is? I thought that the expression, speak truth to power, was a relatively new one. I assumed that it had come out of the anti-oppression work of the last 10 to 20 years. In fact, it was also the title of a book by human rights activist Kerry Kennedy Cuomo, written back in 2003. But really, it's a 1955 work by the American Friends Service Committee. And in that, it states that it's actually from a charge to 18th century friends. So it's not new at all. But what does it mean? The accompanying curriculum for the Kennedy book, which deals with human rights, addresses this by wondering, does it mean to speak truth to those in power, or does it mean that speaking truth is power? I think that question applies to the original Quaker expression, along with this one as well. How does one define power anyway? Is it power as in the government? Is it power as in those who have the ability to oppress others? Surely they weren't referring to the kind of personal power that we've been talking about when the Quakers wrote that book. Well, they had three kinds of power in mind. The first, those who hold places in our national life and bear the terrible responsibility of making decisions for war and peace. Power also rests in the American people, who are the final reservoir of power in this country and whose values and expectations set the limits for those who exercise authority. And power exists just as power in itself. There is a form of personal power they found in the 20th century. So yes, speaking truth to power today would include speaking to our government and to those who hold economic and social authority and privilege. I would say that it also includes speaking to the power that we hold as a collective society and to the free will and the inner power of each individual. Speaking truth to power is as much about speaking out in public forums as it is writing postcards to politicians, donating to social justice causes, voting, and marching. But what is this truth? Our truth, the friend said, is an ancient one. As Kristen read earlier, it's that love endures and overcomes, that hatred destroys, that what is obtained by love is retained, but what is obtained by hatred proves a burden. This truth is ultimately a religious perception, a belief that stands outside of history. So speaking truth to power means using love to stamp out the iniquities that exist in society. Martin Luther King Jr. saw this connection between love and power. He said, "What we need is a realization that power without love is reckless and abusive, and that love without power is sentimental and anemic. Power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. Justice, at its best, is love correcting everything that stands against love." So speaking truth to power, then, means comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. As Tavis Smiley says, none of us has a monopoly on truth. There is the truth, and then there's the way to the truth. We must be humble enough to accept that we only know the truth that we know at any given point on our life's journey. But the truth that we do know, we must speak it. We must have the courage to say what we see. Speaking truth to power, according to Paul Porter, is the ability to lead without fear, because very few actually have the courage to speak the truth. We need that inner strength and inner power that we spoke about earlier. We need to overcome our fear of using it. Perhaps Chicago attorney and law professor Judith Sherwin said it best. The trick about speaking truth to power is to do it from your inner conviction of moral truth, and not from a desire for approbation, and not to be deterred by condemnation. To let your sense of the rightness of things overcome the fear of speaking. We all have the obligation to speak truth to power in our lives, to forces great and small, to defend the powerless, to stand for justice, and to recognize the situations in which we are required to do so. Everyone has the ability to speak truth to power, because we all have the ability to love. Everybody is scared of something, especially now. But we can't let our fear keep us from doing what's right. Let's not allow it to keep us from speaking truth to power. In the words of Rabindranath Tagore, "Let me pray not to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in facing them." I say, let me overcome my fears so that I can come to the edge and fly. May it be so.